Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special carpaccio for you, right?
Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away. Get away from my wife with that.
What's the matter, carpaccio no good?
What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Of course the carpaccio is good. I mean, we've never had bad carpaccio. Sal is on the AT&T hotline joining us for Football Friday. He's going to take us behind the scenes with the Bills. Brought to you by Outlet Liquor for the lowest everyday prices in the state. Shop Outlet Liquor. Good morning, Mr. Capaccio. How are you today?
Excellent, guys. Good morning to you.
So,
I mean, much better atmosphere on Sunday considering the rain you stood in last week. We're looking at 84 and sunny.
Oh, I was checking the weather forecast on the flight home from Baltimore for this week to make sure, guys, to be honest with you. It's going to look really, really good. And, you know, on that note, just really thinking about people down in the Carolinas today. I know we have a lot of transplanted Buffalonians down there, some who call your show. You know, Charlotte's a big area that's going to get a little bit hit here. But you guys know, I say it every year, I've gone through these things. It really is. Really, really is terrible. You don't want to do it. You think it'll be okay, and then you go through these things, and it's some of the worst stuff you could imagine. So anyway, just thinking about people down there, and I'm glad we're not dealing with that here, and I'm glad we're going to have really sunny skies and warm weather this week.
One thing, Sal, there was a Weather Channel, I think it was a Weather Channel thing, about the storm surge.
Yeah, the special effects thing with the woman and the water going up. Oh my God, that was amazing.
I think that was really important because, you know, I think people, I've never been through a hurricane. I think about, you know, wind and rain and the damage, but I guess I never think about the storm surge and what it's like to have 3, 6, 9 feet of water, you know, rolling through parts of your town that can sweep away cars.
It's funny you say that, Jeremy, because I was saying yesterday to some people in the media room, we had the Weather Channel on the TV, and we were having the same discussion, and I said, you know what's funny to me? I said, you shouldn't just go by whatever the category is for the hurricane for the winds. People see, oh, category 2, that must not be that bad. Right. You should have a separate scale. And I think someday they will do this. You should have a separate scale for wind plus storm surge, or just tell us what the storm surge is separately, because that's what kills people. The wind doesn't kill people. It's the flooding that kills people because the storm surge, and it is ridiculous how high it can get. Right now, I just read a story. It's already up to 10 feet in some areas down.
Oh, geez.
Well, that's why this the special effect. So the woman is standing there basically like as if she were on the front lawn of a house on the corner of a street.
Yeah.
And they're showing, okay, 3 feet and then 6 feet, and it's over her head. But they also have a car behind her. And now at 6 feet, I think the car was floating.
The car floats at 3 feet.
3 feet, and then it's 6, and then it's 9. Like, you can barely see the street sign. It was really effective in terms, and the message was, don't screw around. If you think it's not as bad as people are telling you, when storm surges occur, look at what 6 to 9 feet of water is like. Get the heck out when they tell you to get the heck out. It was really effective.
Yeah, it is. And there's more coming, by the way. There's more out there this year, so everybody's got to be prepared and watch out. So, yeah, we hope that everybody stays safe down there. I know it's impacted college football this weekend already. I don't think it's impacting the NFL because I think the Panthers are on the road. But like I said, luckily we're not dealing with that here, and it's going to be over 80 on Sunday. Now, that might be L.A.'s type of weather, but it's also going to be 10 in the morning for them.
Yeah. So, Sal, did you watch last night and freak out in the first half? Like, a lot of Bills fans were seeing the Bengals put it to Baltimore and thinking, oh my God, this has got to be something terrible. This means Baltimore's not that good and the Bills are even worse.
I did not freak out, but I knew what was happening on social media, and I didn't even go on because I knew exactly
you
what
shouldn't
people
have
were
good.
Saying.
It's a good thing you didn't.
No, because I knew that would happen. In fact, I'll be honest, before the game, my wife said to me, you know what's going to happen tonight, right? Cincinnati's going to blow out Baltimore, and everybody's just going to say, oh my God, how bad can the Bills be? And then suddenly it's 3 touchdowns in the first half, and she said, see? And look, here's the thing. Here's why. These Thursday night games, you just never know. We've seen so many of them go sideways over the years. It's a weird night to have a game. You never know the preparation. And since he actually has played Baltimore very well over the years in the Marvin Lewis era, you know, they won that game last year to get into the keep them out of the playoffs, the Ravens that we know about so much. So I was not freaking out about it, Jeremy, to be honest with you. In fact, but Cincinnati was my team to go to the AFC Championship game this year. Yeah. They are good. It's not surprising to me that they have enough talent to score against the Baltimore Ravens.
The you know, Josh Allen, I want to ask you first and foremost about Josh Allen Sunday. What can the offensive coordinator do when starting a young quarterback? You know, Monday Night Football, if you're watching, they were talking about, I think it's Jeremy Bates and what game plan he was putting together for Sam Darnold. How can Brian Daboll help out Josh Allen Sunday in his debut?
It's a great question, and I think it really starts with LeSean McCoy. You know, and I'm not saying that they should have had him more in the game plan last Sunday. Once the game got away from them, you have to go away from that a little bit. But I think that was probably the game plan there as well. And now it really, I think, comes into effect with Josh Allen. I think this Bills team, the way that they're constructed, we said it all year, we said it all summer, that, you know, they're going to be a run-first team anyway. Well, now it's really more important, I think, to be a run-first team. They're going to have to establish something on the ground to at least give the threat of LeSean McCoy running to then allow Josh Allen to do what he does best, which is, you know, throw the deep ball, throw it downfield, be aggressive. And if the Chargers have to worry a little bit more about LeSean McCoy in the running game and have to creep up a little bit, you know, that'll give Josh Allen a little more one-on-one coverage to be able to identify and throw to. It'll give him a little bit more of a some aggressive opportunities. So I think that's first and foremost. The other thing is protect him, man. Find ways. If you have to keep a running back in the backfield, if you have to keep an extra tight end in the block, I know that that takes less guys in the route, but so be it. If that's the case, at least give Josh Allen enough time. He doesn't have to have, you know, everybody running free, but give him enough time so he feels comfortable to me in the pocket, right? I mean, even if it turns out to be an incompletion or he has to run eventually, at least he's not getting his third or fifth foot in the ground that has to run, Howard. You know, I mean, I think that's what would really be spooky.
I was wondering about the you know, the whole idea of there are two schools of thought with a young quarterback when it comes to protection. If you don't trust your offensive line, you can max protect, right? Keep extra guys in to, in theory, buy him more time. Or you go the opposite way and say what you just pointed out. If you max protect, there are less targets. You spread it out, and you hope your offensive line can buy him 3 seconds or whatever, but you've got more targets flooding the field, and at least he can get the ball out quicker or have more options to get the ball out.
Yeah, one of the things they did last week, actually, when he came in the game, was they went five wides. That gives him an opportunity to identify coverage. What's that?
Go empty, right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm sorry. Yeah, they went empty. They went the five wides. He could identify coverage that way. He could see exactly. He saw the man to man. And you know, remember the long run up the middle that he had originally when he first came in the game. That was out of that, I believe. And as soon as he saw that the middle was vacated, basically he just took off. You know, and that was a good identification on his part. So I think that's one of the things you can do too is, you know, by formation, he can help identify coverage. So I think you want to give him some easy coverage reads, if you will. Use some motion to give you some coverage reads. Is the corner running with the receiver or the running back going in motion? If that's the case, it might be an indication of man-to-man. You could do some things that I think at least help him pre-snap, not necessarily even post-snap.
Sal with us here on our AT&T hotline. You have any Bills questions for Sal? 803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550. Before you get into other matchups, let's do the injury report and find out what's going on in terms of that with the Bills. The injury report with Sal is brought to you by Univera Healthcare. Compare because you care at univeraforbusiness.com. What do you got?
Well, just like last week, guys, I'm going to tell you that the Bills are pretty healthy. Same injuries last week. Ray McLeod looks like, as of this point, I doubt he would play, but we'll see. You know, we'll get the injury update on him for the game when it comes up here later today. But he has really yet to practice this week, and he did not again yesterday. He's got that knee. And then you have Julian Stanford, a full participant, and the only two that did not participate are Taron Johnson with the shoulder and Shaq Lawson with the hamstring. And like I said, right now, you know, it's not looking good for them this late in the week. You know, but we'll see where we go. I think the more interesting injury situation is on the Chargers side of things.
Yeah.
Joey Bosa is not going to play. I mean, that's pretty certain as of right now. And it doesn't look like Travis Benjamin is going to play either. The wide receiver. Okay. He is dealing with, I want to make sure, again, I get this right, he's dealing with a foot injury. He did not practice yesterday. Neither did Joe Barksdale, their right tackle. He's out so far. Did not practice all week. So they're dealing with some injuries on that side of the on the Charger side. Craig Mager, the cornerback, hamstring, did not participate either.
The Bosa thing is big. I mean, last year, I think Bosa did more damage than Ingram. Bosa had like a sack and I think four quarterback hits, and that's a huge loss in this game for the Chargers. And at least from the Bills' standpoint, you know, I think maybe it'll be Dawkins, I guess, against Ingram, but you don't have to worry about dealing with Bosa on the other side.
No, that's right. I think though that if you are having, you know, you have a rookie quarterback, you know, back there, no matter if you have Joey Bosa or anybody, you're probably going to blitz him a lot, you know, so I think that either way, they're going to try and get pressure, and maybe without Bosa, that's even more so. You know, maybe they say basically, you know, Gus Bradley is the defensive coordinator. He's going to be aggressive, I think. He's, you know, got a bit of a reputation for that anyway, so he's probably going to come after him. One of the things that, you know, Nathan Peterman did speak this week. We talked with him about the situation last week, and as always, he's a professional in the locker room, but I asked him, I said, how much, even though the game didn't go your way last year, how much can you help Josh Allen knowing that this is the team that you prepared all week for last year, that you started against them? And he brought up a good point. He said, well, not only that, but he said also the Jaguars and the Atlanta Falcons, they run the same defense. And because he was on the team last year in the quarterback room, he prepared for them. So, you know, he can at least help Josh Allen out a little bit in some of the things he might see because of that Gus Bradley defense that they have seen a few times.
Yeah. It's kind of a postscript, but how did Peterman handle all the stuff when the media had a chance to talk to him this week?
Like a pro. I mean, he always does. You know, he stood and answered every question. He was accountable. He put a lot of onus on himself, and, you know, as he should. And he said, you know, I could have helped myself out. There were definitely checks that he said there were some checks at the line that he did not get them into good enough situations, which I thought was interesting. He talked about his accuracy. He said, I have to be more accurate. He mentioned the first interception where, you know, that was a pass that he definitely was not accurate on, and he should have been. But, you know, he also said it's a true test of your character as a man and how you're going to, you know, handle things like this. And, you know, he expects to rebound and be ready to go once again if his name is called.
The other day, Sal, after the quarterback stuff, Sean McDermott mentioned same five starting offensive linemen, but he said they're still working their way through the other starting cornerback. Any idea how that's proceeding and who might be playing opposite Trey White on Sunday?
Well, I mean, if Taron Johnson can't play, I would suspect you would move Phillip Gaines inside and put Vontae Davis back outside and start. But you don't have to do that if they're not if they're not satisfied, if they're not confident in Vontae Davis being able to play, then they're not going to do that. You know what they did last week, Howard, was when Taron Johnson went out because Vontae wasn't available, Rafael Bush came in as an extra defensive back, and he dropped down into the box. So you used a safety basically in that big nickel package instead of a corner, and they could do that again as well.
Yeah, because Jeremy had mentioned, I guess the Chargers have been using Keenan Allen at times in the slot.
60% of his snaps were on the inside last week.
So if they do that, what do the Bills do? How do they match up to that? Trey White wouldn't play in the slot, would he?
No,
That. How would you match up against Keenan Allen in that case?
Whoever's there is there. The Bills don't really do that. They don't like say, well, there's Keenan Allen, we're going to move you over here. I mean, they could put that in this week if they wanted to, but generally it's each guy has, you know, it's your left side, right side, you know, Trey White's on the left, Vontae Davis or Phillip Gaines is on the right, and whoever's in the slot is in the slot, and then you just go cover and you do the best you can. And, you know, that might not be sexy or the answer people want to hear. He's a really great receiver, but I don't think they're not going to go by matchups because, look, if you start doing that, then if you're the Chargers, you can also start dictating some things. You know, the Bills don't want to do that. They don't want to, you know, necessarily put Keenan Allen in the slot. Let's say you put Tre'Davious White on him. They don't want to put him in the slot and then suddenly like, well, now this is the matchup we create in the outside because we have a huge matchup on another guy. So, you know, they're gonna go play where they play normally, not have to worry about that. So I don't know. I mean, it really just comes down to what package they feel more comfortable. And with Melvin Gordon as a running back, I wouldn't be surprised to see a third safety on the field instead of a corner if Taron Johnson can't play.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's not just as much as you might think about Keenan Allen because he terrified the Bills last year. The latest in a long line of Mike Williams NFL receivers is playing for the Chargers. He, you know, right, he was injured last year. He had a good game last week against Kansas City. And you mentioned Melvin Gordon. He had over 100 yards receiving, so you got to worry about him in the running game, but he's also a threat in their passing game. My point is, Sal, there are a multitude of weapons that Phillip Rivers has that you got to deal with.
Did you hear Phillip Rivers last week said, we could have thrown for 600 yards?
Yeah, that's
what he said. And by the way, he might have been right.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what he said about the Kansas City game. And look, I don't think the Chiefs' defense is all that good, especially their secondary. I think they're pretty leaky this year, pretty weak. But that I'm not taking anything away from Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. You know, in my 5 years, this is my fifth year now, in my four-plus years on the sidelines, there are just certain guys that – I've seen play that I'm like, you know, wow. I mean, that guy, he's what a great football player. And Phillip Rivers is one of them. The first time I saw him on the field was the year, was it 2014? The Bills, they had him here in Buffalo. It was also a September game. And I just was so impressed with him. I mean, I've always been an admirer of Phillip Rivers anyway, but he just stood out on the field. He's bigger than you think when you're down there. He's a big guy. And just the way he throws the football, just everything he can do out there. I don't know how to describe it, but he's one of the rare people I would put on a list to say, boy, he just really stands out when he's down there of how great he is.
Sal here on our AT&T hotline, 803-0550 to participate in Football Friday. Rob, you're on with Sal here on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was just wondering, Sal, if you thought, do you have any rumblings? Are you hearing anything about the Bills signing a veteran, maybe a Matt Moore or somebody like that? My only concern is now, you know, a lot of Bills fans probably feel the same way. If, you know, Josh Allen gets dinged up, then obviously we've got to put Peterman back in there, and that just doesn't seem like a viable option for us if we want to be successful. So I just don't do it. Is that even in their MO, or are they looking? Or, I mean, I know,
you
know.
I think I would say they're always looking. I would say they're always evaluating, but don't look for it this week. It's Friday, right? I mean, so that's not happening this week. If something happens to Josh Allen this week, Nathan Peterman's going in. And on top of that, if you do sign somebody, how long does it take for them even to get up to speed? If they sign somebody next Monday, for example, after this game, I don't think that they would even be ready to necessarily play. So you're probably looking at a few weeks out, even for someone to come in that could, you know, help out. I understand the concern, and I think it's a valid concern and a fair concern. But right now it's Nathan Peterman, and I wouldn't expect anything anytime soon, anyone to be ready. But I wouldn't discount the possibility. They could very well bring somebody in here, and guys, they might just not like anybody out there. That's the thing. I like Matt Moore too, actually. You know, he actually has some roots back in Carolina where this regime was. But you know, they might not just like anybody who's out there. It might not necessarily be that they don't want to bring someone in. They just don't like their options.
Let me get one more call. Excuse me, Randall in Blaisdell. You're on with Sal. Go right ahead.
Morning. Considering the track record of ownership over the course of the last few years, and then taking the Sabres into account, you had Bosma, who was 2 years in. You had Buddy Sun, who was 2 years in, and now you got McDermott, who's in his second year. Do you think that ownership has this regime on a short leash at this point, or do they believe in the process?
I want to give my opinion on this.
I was going to say let Jeremy handle this after the discussion we had yesterday about the Bovada
I
stuff.
Think there is no chance they're on the hot seat. No chance. As much as we can point to Rex being fired after 2 years, why was Rex fired after 2 years?
A lot of personality
crap
going
on. Because
he
embarrassed them. Yeah. Why was Tim Murray fired? Similarly, he kind of embarrassed them. And Sean McDermott does not embarrass ownership. Sean McDermott also got the team to the playoffs. It is the same ownership group that, remember the famous phrase about Darcy Regier? What's he done wrong? Like that, there is, if the owner feels good about the people working for them, if the owners feel good about, they're going to keep that guy. I think Sean McDermott is as safe can possibly be. I'm prepared to be wrong on this, but he made the playoffs. He killed the drought for them. He does not embarrass them outside of the Peterman stuff, which they might support because they think Peterman's a nice kid too. Mm-hmm. So I think there is zero chance that this coaching staff, that this GM, maybe there's a rift there. If there's a rift there, That's different. But I think Sean McDermott is among the most safe coaches in the NFL.
I agree. You said everything I would say, Jeremy. Unless something happens, like internal strife of some sort.
Like if they feel the Doug Whaley thing is starting, right? If it's, oh my God, we went through this.
I don't think it would have to be starting, Howard. It would have to be full
happening,
blown.
Yeah. And they don't want to go through it again. Yeah. So they just decide to part ways with one of the two guys. Yeah. All right, Capaccio. Well, we'll see you Sunday. Stay hydrated and I guess sunscreen. I don't want you to burn.
Yeah, new location for us too for the radio
field
stuff
house.
Outside.
Yes, make sure you go to the proper location.
Make sure people know. Yes. Yeah, and it's a lot. I don't know if people know. You've been over there, Howard. A lot of construction over there.
No, right? I haven't.
They're building an. I think I want to say eight.
Is that the new weight
18.
Room?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a new weight room. So it's lots of millions of dollars weight room that's going in, and it's right in front of the where the ticket office is. There's no parking there anymore, and then extends out by the field house. There's no parking, so you have to navigate. So people who are listening. When you go there, you know, you have to navigate through there if you want to come see us. It's walkable. There are parking areas over there, but not where right in front of the ticket office. Like I said, even for media, when we show up now, that's where we normally park.
Yeah.
That is not, we can't park there anymore. So I just want people to be aware when they go in there. There's a lot of construction and you can find us. You can navigate your way. And I'm sure there's going to be great people and parking attendants and security. They're going to help everybody, but it is a little different.
The Fieldhouse lot is still open, right? Still there, isn't it, for parking?
Fieldhouse lot. Which one is that? When you pull in?
The lot when you come in through the little guard booth and you turn right.
Yep,
that's where I've been parking. Like that.
Well, that's where I'm. That's where the construction is.
So where am I supposed to?
I mean, you can go. You can keep going, right?
Yeah,
you can keep
just
going
further
right?
down.
Yeah. Right there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, you just got to go further down.
You got to go a little further down. Yeah, but if you pull in the through the gate and right to the right there, you cannot park there anymore. That's where all the construction is.
Depending on how far down I have to park, can you pick me up from my car and drive me?
No,
to the
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. You okay. Walking is good for you, especially in 80-degree weather.
All right, but I'm dragging a bag with a computer. All right, fine. Thank you, Sal. We'll see you Sunday.
All right, guys. You're welcome.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.